Tzir is Levi Nishmas, Ezra ben Mazal, right? I'll just tell you a bit of an introduction. This coming week, this coming Shabbat, is going to be Rosh Chodesh Shvat. So right away, Alan says Tu B'Shvat, right? So it's Rosh Chodesh Shvat. But what does Rosh Chodesh Shvat have in common with Tu B'Shvat? The Mishnah, the first Mishnah of Rosh Hashanah. The first Mishnah of Rosh Hashanah says Be'echad B'Shvat Rosh Hashanah L'Ilon. The first day of Shvat is the Rosh Hashanah to the tree. Kedivrei Beit Shammai, according to the words of Beit Shammai. And then it says Betil, and according to Betil, when is it going? Is it Tu B'Shvat? Right? Says Lo B'Shvat. That's what the Mishnah tells us. So I saw a beautiful question, which is brought in many Torah. Usually, the way the Mishnah would be written would be as follows. It says Beit Shammai Omim, according to Beit Shammai, when is the Rosh Hashanah for the Ilonai? On Al Shvat. And according to Betil, when is it? It's on Tu B'Shvat. But now the Mishnah says, what does the Mishnah say? The Mishnah says something totally different. The Mishnah says, Be'echad B'Shvat is Rosh Hashanah L'Ilon, Kedivrei, according to the words, Be'Shamay of Be'Shamay. Why would the Mishnah be written that way? Huh? It's like a funny way to write the Mishnah, no? That's an interesting, maybe. But by the way, it's already halfway through the Mishnah. Because the Mishnah starts off with all the other Rosh Hashanah. Abba Rosh Hashanah, so it's really the second half of the Mishnah. But it's a nice thought, what you're saying. And the other question, which I saw in the Mishnah, is that it says, Be'echad B'Shvat, Rosh Hashanah L'Ilon, is Rosh Hashanah to the tree. Why does it say Rosh Hashanah to the tree? It says Rosh Hashanah L'Ilon Noit, to the tree. So what's going on over here? So I saw a very interesting thought. I'm going to share with you a very nice thought that I saw. There's a beautiful sefer that's written by the first Rebbe of Gur. His name was the Chadishei Harim. You know, everybody's familiar with the Tzfatzemes, right? The Tzfatzemes everybody's familiar with. Tzfatzemes was a grandson to the Chadishei Harim, with his grandfather. The Tzfatzemes father passed away very young. So he took over, he grew up in his grandfather's house, eventually he took over his grandfather's position. He says as follows, he says, anytime in the Torah, you see a pasuk that says a date, there's something very significant about that date. In the Torah, where the Torah specifies that a certain date happened on a certain day, something happened on a certain day, that means that there's something we need to know about that date. For instance, I guess the second, which one I'm referring to. And he says, and let me just explain what he means to say when he says that we need to, that what's significant it has to us. He says there's two ways of celebration, right? There's one way of celebration where you say, okay, 2,000 years ago, this happened. But what does that have to do with me today? Nothing. Very often you have a different concept, and that is 2,000 years ago, this happened, and therefore every day of the year, every year on that day that this happened, there's a special hashpah that comes from Shemayim. There's a special feeling and there's a special, you know, ability to get a certain kedusha. For example, like it says, the Gemara says in Masechta Shabbat that when it came to Chanukah, they had the first year, they had the Nes of Chanukah, and the Mishnah says, Lushana Acheres Kovim, right? The next year they decided to make Chanukah. So the Mefarshim asked, why the next year? So the answer is they weren't sure the first year. Was it an isolated nace that happened just this year? Or is it that every year, whatever Kedusha Hashem sent to the world on that first Hanukkah is going to come down on every Hanukkah? When they saw that in the following years of Hanukkah, the same thing happened all over again, so they knew, okay, now we're in business. Now we have a reason to have a Yom Tov. Right? That's the idea of the Shana Acheres, always to the following year. And, for example, Shavuot, right? What happens on the Shavuot? That is the Yom Tov of Kabbalah HaTorah, and that is the time that we have the ability to re-accept the Torah. Right? Remember that point. Okay, now, there's a pasuk in the beginning of Parshas Devarim. The pasuk says as follows. It says, Be'achad osa chodesh, be'echad lachodesh. Right? Remember, right in the beginning of Devarim. Be'achad osa chodesh, be'echad lachodesh. On the 11th month of the year, on the first day of the month. When is that? Aleph Shvat. Right? How does the pasuk continue? Diber Moshe, al kolbnei Yisrael, kechoy la tetziva Hashem. Right? So what happened on the first day of Shvat? Moshe Rabbeinu went and he told Klai Yisrael, Dvorim. What do we know about Dvorim? What's the difference between Dvorim and the rest of the Torah? Dvorim is Mishneh Torah. It's the beginning of the Torah Shabbat Peh. Right? The Ramban writes. What does the Ramban write in the beginning of Dvorim? The whole Torah, the first four, that's simple Torah Shabbat Shebetzav. Dvorim is the Memusa, right? It's in between the Torah Shebetzav, and suddenly from here in comes the Torah Shabbat Peh. What happens on Tu B'Shvat, this coming Shabbos? You know, on Echad B'Shvat, you know what happens? What happens is, every one of us gets the ability to start learning Torah with a new freshness and with a new ability to uncover the Torah Shebal Peh. That's what we have the ability to do on Tu B'Shvat. That's when the sprouting, what's that? Well, about to get to that. The difference between the first one and the second one, 100%. I just want to repeat to you what it says in the Maral. Listen guys, I'll tell you what the Maral writes. The Maral writes that all the Yom Tovim of the year work around trees. You have Chag HaOviv, Chag HaOsif, Chag HaKotzir, right? Get the Maral right? The Maral writes that Hashem made the world, that through the world we should have the ability to see Ruchnius. But we don't have the ability with our own eyes to see Ruchnius. So Hashem made that we should see everything in a physical sense, and from the physical sense we have the ability to understand how we should deal with our ruchnistic spiritual life. That's what the Maral writes. Now, the Ilan that is referred to refers to the Ilan, which is the Eitz Chaim, which is the Torah. That's what it refers to. And on the time of Tu B'Shvat is the time that the trees start to sprout. And the time that the tree starts to sprout, what happens is, that's the time for you to have an effect on your own person. Just like the tree comes up with a chidush, right? There's something new coming out of the tree. You have the ability at that point to be mechadesh and start to have new chidushim in Torah. That's what can happen on Tu B'Shvat. Now, what's the difference between Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel? Beit Shammai was much sharper than Beit Hillel, right? The difference, Beit Shammai was mechadesh b'tzvei. Beit Hillel was the Roy, that was most of the people. And therefore, Beit Shammai, who was mechadesh b'tzvei, who was much sharper, they started to see the Hashpah of Torah 15 days earlier, on the first day. Okay, the truth is, what's the real day? The real day is said in the Torah, is the first day of Shvat. Right? That's the truth. But on the other hand, the average person doesn't really feel it until 15 days later, which is the time of Tu B'Shvat. Okay? But I want to tell you guys that the Sfarim write that this year we all have the ability to get it on Rosh Chodesh Shvat. You know why? Because Rosh Chodesh Shvat is on Shabbat. And Shabbat is the day that brings us closer to L'Osad Lovay, right? The Yom Shekulei Shabbos. And on the Yom Shekulei Shabbos, who are we going to rule like? B'Shamay or Beit Hillel? B'Shamay. So this year there's an extra significance to this Shabbos. That's the Shabbos which is going to be Tu B'Shvat. Yeah. There's a time for us to absorb, and we can really, really accomplish. What's that?
Kaparayim,
exactly. Kaparayim, what? Kim v'kibli, 100%. A very, very appropriate time is this Shabbos. You know, I just point out one very interesting thing. What do you do by Musaf on the Chodesh Shabbos? How do you daven? Do you say Tikkun Shabbos?
No.
What do you say? Ati Yetzarta. Now, I want to point out something very interesting. You read the Atei Yetzarta, there are certain things written in the Atei Yetzarta that's greater than Shabbos and greater than Rosh Chodesh. You know that? It's interesting. It's not a combination of Shabbos and Rosh Chodesh. You know what it is? It's sort of a bridge version of a Tfilah of Yom Tov. Right? Ve'erachi Yechayom La'alos V'le'roi. And you say different things in there that you'll read it, it mimics the Tfilah of Yom Tov. I once saw a Sefer write, he said, what's going on over here? It's not Shabbat, it's not Rosh Chodesh. What are we doing Yom Tov for? The answer is, when Rosh Chodesh is Shabbat, it's on such a high level that it becomes like a Yom Tov. Yeah? That's what happens on Rosh Chodesh Shabbat. So there's a lot of special things that are going to happen this weekend, and like Aaron told us, Chaparayim. Right? That's the idea. What would you say a father should do if a son approached him and a son said, by the way, I think my sibling doesn't deserve Yerusha. Why? The father says, why? He says, because my sibling is not behaving appropriately. And he's a Mechalel Shabbat, and he's an Apotreus, don't give him Yerusha. So the father looks into it, and the father says, you're right, he cuts him out of the Yerusha. Then a few years go by, and the son keeps on coming to the father, and one day the father turns to the son, and he says, what is the son talking about? This son's a wonderful son. I'm going to give him Yerusha. So he includes him in the will again, he rewrites the will, he includes him. Right? What do you think would be the appropriate punishment for the son that lied to his father and convinced his father that his brother is the Mechalel Shabbat and he should cut him out of the Yerusha? What would be the appropriate punishment of that son? If you were the father, what would you do?
Okay, I think
so. So what do you do?
Whatever you want to do.
Cut him out. So you think is that the appropriate thing to do? Believe it or not, the Sheikh Hamed brings an opinion of one of the old poskim who says that. Alright, listen to this. Amazing that you caught out there. Take a look at page number 2. Who was Ezra? Who was Rav Pedotzi? Are you familiar with that paper? He quotes him. I think it was probably one of the. I never actually read it. I brought it over into this. You read it already. You saw it, right. Look, take a look at this. He says on page 2. Im Ruvain Yat Lo'oviv, Ruvain gave advice to his father, Litchoit et Shimon Ochit, to push Shimon, his brother, out of the Yerusha, Minachlosoi, Lepishemotavoy Eza Avoy, he found something wrong with his brother. Vishiv Ro Ha'av Kitabiku, then he saw, the father saw that really the brother's a Tzadik, and Kitabiku Shimon, Mimashahel Olav Ruvain, so he says as follows. Now he can punish the first child, Benoya's son, Minachasa, Velikan Lashim, and he can give it to Shimon. The Ein Bazer Mishim Ibur Asansa. That's not called Ma'avir Nachala, right? There's nothing wrong with that. But Asisam Loi, Kashmir Zaman Lashim Tlaoch. Yeah, okay. Say Baruch Shekivanti. You hit the nail on the head. Huh? Lashim Tlaoch. Kain Yishlumoi Midivrei Harab Hayofa, Shehedi Harab Ben Pedotzi, and Pash Chatsa. And now he has the following proof. What's his proof? Because there was once a choshev of years, what was his name? Rebbe Eliezer ben Horkanis. Who knows the story of Rebbe Eliezer ben Horkanis? Horkanis had a son. And his son didn't want to stay by his father. His son eventually became Rebbe Eliezer. And Rebbe Eliezer went to learn Torah in Yerushalayim by Rebbe Yochanan ben Zakkai. Right? So what happens? All the Horkanis, lo yada lama baruch. He didn't know why his son ran away. And then he followed him. And he followed him and he said, when I catch him, you know what I'm going to tell him? You got to listen. You're not coming home? I'm going to cut you out of my will. That was his intention of what he planned to tell him. And then he came to Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai and he saw his son was sitting there at the front of the Beit Midrash and he was so famous and he was so successful. So what did he do? Someone believed like the father, Horkanis, was very happy. The Amar Lo, he said to his son, he says, listen, I want you to know the reason I came down here to Yerushalayim was to cut you out of the will. That's the real reason why I came. But now that I see that you're such a great Talmid Chacham, you know what I'm going to do? Not only I'm not going to cut you out of the will, but you know what I'm going to do? I'll give you everything, and I'll cut your siblings out of the will. That's what Horkanis did. Oh, so he says, what do you see from here? Why did he do that? Because the siblings went to their father, and they said, you know our brother, you know why he ran away? Not because he went to Memphis, but rather because he's a lazy bum. And since he doesn't want to work, so what do? So they cut him out. But now that the father saw that what the brothers told him were not true, so the father went and he cut out the brother. Right? That's what he basically said. So you have a proof that Vasis and Loi catches Zalman Lashes Leochem. What? No, that's he quotes the magic, but the magic says that. You see, take a look. He quotes the Pirkei de Abeleza, the Ochev Yotzei et Aviyem, that the father advised, the brothers advised their father and Adoisim and Chosav, Nichalas lehem kashazom, Eilu Torev Divar Rav Yifei Torev. So the Sechemer says, I disagree with him. Right, so listen, it was a good thought. Good halamina, huh? You know, in the certain places, by the way, they don't say Tachanun on certain days of the year. It's very interesting. For example, And you know, on Pur, we don't say Yudalit it says Vav. With Adar, we don't say. Why? Because it's Pur and Shushan Pur. How about Yudalit, Yudbeis, Yudgimel, Yudalit? We don't need to say Tachanun. Why? Because those are the days that you could read the Megillah, so therefore it's part of Purim already. Correct? Okay? In Ger, they don't say Tachanun on Tezvav, on Tezan. You know why? Because the Gemara has a question. After the Gemara says that we read the Megillah on Yudalit, right, from Yudalit through Tezvav, the Gemara says, Ve'eim v'shitza v'shitza, maybe also the 16th day and the 17th day of the month, right? That's the Gemara's question. So what does the Gemara say? No, v'lo yaver, right? You can't pass the day of Tezvav. So the Chiddush HaRim, the Shatemis, also said this one set of brilliant insight, the insight of the Talmud. He says, when the Gemara has a Havamina, and then the Gemara says, no, the Havamina doesn't work because of a certain question. If not for that question, the Havamina would have been perfect. You know, the Gemara's Havamina is not like our Havamina. Our Havamina is we just throw something out. I mean, it's not true. But it's not only not true because of the reason you said, it's not true because for 50 other reasons. But when the Gemara made a statement, if not for the pircha of the Gemara, why the Gemara's statement is incorrect, that would be the truth. So, in a few lines, you would say, the Havamina of the Gemara without the Maskana would also have been the Maskana. Yeah, the Havamina of the Gemara is such a perfect question. Without that one specific question, would have been the Maskana. So, in Ger, for that reason, because the Gemara asked the question, oh, the 16 and 17 should also be the Megillah. But the Gemara said you can't because it's a pasuk of a lo yavor. They don't say tachna on the 16 to 17. Yeah? So, good halamina is also well worthwhile. So, don't let it get you. But yet, the truth is, there's a lot of questions on this. The Sechemah disagrees with it. Tell me why would you argue with this right? I have many reasons that I don't think this right is a right. Why would you argue with this right? Firstly, did Hokus' brothers say he was not religious? Never said that. What did they say?
Lazy.
He's lazy. So, is lazy a reason to cut out the Yerusha? No. That's number one. Secondly, I tell you the truth, I don't really understand the right in the first place. Hokus was a Tamil Chacham. Yeah, so what's the proof? I don't see what the proof from Horkinus is. And again, at the end, when he wanted to leave all of the chassim to one child, was that correct according to the halacha? Not necessarily. And what's the reason why you're not ma'av nachla? What's the reason? Because the child might have good children. So if a child's lazy, so you want to have good children? You can have good children even if he's lazy, right? So, in any event, most of this, it's just interesting to the thought, but according to the halacha, it's very hard to accept this one point. Now, let's get down to the bottom line, guys. Let's do a bit of a summary, but just share that we should know what you're actually allowed to do. The problem is that we learned the halacha the last few weeks. It's very hard to be mavanachal, because if you're mavanachal, it's just about everything you do, you get an avera. Right? So is there a way that you can get out of this problem and leave money to whoever you want and never have mavanachal? What would you say?
Let's say you have the two sons, and one of them is very, very wealthy, and the other one is destitute.
Okay.
Leave him the money.
Okay.
To the poor one, and the other guy.
So would there be a choice? Would there be a choice? Happened to be last week by the shir. There was a man here last week by the shir, and his father passed away. He had two siblings. One was a sister whose husband is still in Kolel. They're married about 30 years, you know, he's just a shir. And then he has a sibling that has a very large family. And he's the Bukhar, fellow that was here last week by the shir. He has to be the Bukhar. So his father left the money to his three children. So the father left real estate, okay, which, mind you, I'm going to go slow for a second. The real estate that his father left, this child bought for his father. Okay, because his father wants, you know, he wants his father to have something, so he bought his father into the business. The real estate was bought by this child for his father. The father also left, you know, stocks, mutual funds, you know, cash, commodities, whatever it was. Those were the two things the father left. So his fellow went, and he was the Bukhar. He took all the real estate that was left in the father's name went to the daughter whose husband is still sitting and living. The bank account, you know, the substantial sums of money there, went to the siblings that had a very large family. And he for himself asked if he can have some of the estate, two things. Huh? Yeah. It gets better. He asked if he can have his father's coat that he used to the Seder. That's one thing he wanted. The second thing was he wanted the yarmulke that his father wore for the Seder. Yosef gave that to him, huh? Huh? No, but you can imagine, you listen to how, the truth is, that you see how some people act. I mean, it's before a person fights over Yerusha, they gotta see, just to talk about your case. But by the way, that case is a bit different, because that case, the son himself made a decision that he wants to do it. Technically speaking, Chazal tell us that if you're not Ma'al Nachla, but you leave everybody Yerusha, but you add to one child and more than the other child, so there's no real Ma'al Nachla necessarily. On the other hand, I want you to know that the Rav Shulchan Aruch that you'll see later in these Tshuvas says that's never to do it, to leave everybody equally. So this is exactly what I want to discuss in the next few minutes, in order that we can get a bit of an insight. What are the proper loopholes for how to get around these things so there shouldn't be an issue? So first thing I want to tell you what the Tashbis writes. There's a Tashbis.
Sorry, in that last case, the Tashbis,
yeah.
So the father did nothing wrong. So
the father left everything regular. The kids, right. The son tried to be Mavata.
Right, so the son that was Con Ed, and then he gave him to whoever he wants.
Right, but Jack's asking a very different question. The question that Jack is asking is, you have one child that's very wealthy, one child that's not wealthy, so what do you do? And you want to give more to one than the other. Is there anything wrong with that? That's the question that Jack is asking. So I want to discuss a few ways to possibly get around these issues. Okay? Look at the Ksais, what the Ksais writes on the bottom of page number 2. The Ksais says as follows. He says, the Tashbitz Kosav, the Ksais Rishonis, the Rishonim Yashir Arba, Zuza, the Kosav Goyim Zal, the Mishim Kedei, Shatei Hakam Mechahimen. He quotes the Baal Ha'itza. The Baal Ha'itza says that if you leave 4 Zuz, if you leave a certain substantial sum to every single one of your children, for Yerusha Daraisa, afterwards whatever you do is no problem with Ma'al Nachla whatsoever. You hear what the Baal Ha'itza says? No, but the sugya is much more just the opposite. It's impossible. Yeah, Yerusha, because there's an error, right? There's an anger when a person doesn't leave, because it says that if a person doesn't leave a son, Hashem is angry at him, so therefore if a person doesn't leave Yerusha, so it's like he doesn't leave a son, and Hashem gets angry. I understand all of that. There's one problem, but what is he saying? He's saying that once you leave it, and I've seen, by the way, many Yerushas written this way. They start off the first paragraph is, firstly, I take $10,000 and I leave it to my children, and with that, I'm a kind Yerusha, they write it. Right, so $1,000, I leave it to my children, with that, I'm a kind Yerusha Daraisa. Then on top of that, you do whatever you want. Right, I'll tell you, it's a wonderful point that the Mashmur from the Rajabam, but I want you to know there's a clear Gemara that says differently. In Gittin, not in Bolivar. The Gemara says in Gittin that the Gemara says, the Baba Bamamu didn't want to walk into a Chatuna. Why? Because the person gave too much tshuva to his daughter. So what does the Gemara say? He said to him, you're Ma'al Nachla. So what does the Gemara answer? No problem, it's not Ma'al Nachla, because Chazal made a takana that you can help our daughters in order to marry him off. Right? So the Gemara has a question, and how could you, if the Torah said that it's Ma'al Nachla, how can you go and Chazal be differently? So the Gemara says, we have no choice. Fine. But let's analyze that case. When he gave Ketubah to his daughter, he gave everything to his daughter? No. He gave part of his money to his daughter. So you see that from the Gemara clearly, that even when you left over some of your money, right, some of your money, and you did a regular amount of Yerusha Daraisa, there still could be Ma'al Nachla. What do you say that, Kat? Huh? Pretty solid right, no?
Yeah.
Okay, except now you can argue that it's not a perfect right, because you can say the Gemara simply meant to say that, look, the theme of the Torah was to split your money. It's not the spirit of the halakha. So,
yeah,
to go and say that every daughter should get...
They use,
what's that?
They were shown that they use that story with
Ibu Rakhtantra. Yeah, Ibu Rakhtantra. Now take a look. I want to show you an absolutely fascinating truth of some Sefer. I'd like you guys to know... I want to throw out a few questions. Because we should think about these questions. Number one, what is the story if you... if you leave over a certain amount of Yerusha to every child, and then you leave money to somebody on the outside, would it be Malva Nachla or not? That's the first question. I just showed you a Bala Itta and a Tashbit, which is so close, it's no Malva Nachla. Question number two, you're leaving money for Tzedakah, is it Malva Nachla? Leave a large amount of money for charity. Did you do something wrong to the Yerushim or not?
Are you assuming that any amount that goes out in the Gemara?
Okay, so let's go back to that question. Firstly, what's called matana? If you did it, are we going according to the poskim that says, like the Sechem is quoted, that if you do the matana at the time of mitah, so then what happens? It's considered like Yerusha. Okay, that's question number two. Let's go to question number three. If a person doesn't have kids, and he only has siblings, brothers, or he has nephews, is the Mada Nachla from the closest relative? Person didn't have children, and he has a first cousin that took care of him every single day for 50 years, and he wants to give a wish to this person. But he has a closer relative that never ever looked at him. What do you do? Is Mada Nachla something that your shim or children? Those are three questions that we should deal with. What's going to be interesting is...
What happened if the halakha didn't leave a will?
Right.
Who was that subject to? Where would the money go?
To the closest relative.
The brother.
Yeah. Because there's an order. There's an order of how it goes. Next week, Bezat Hashem, by the Shiur, I'm going to discuss how to leave a will with an appropriate will. The wording that there should be in the will. How to do? Do you need to leave a civil will? Do you need to leave a Torah will? That's what I will discuss next week in the shiur. We'll get to that next week. If a person only left a civil will that was held in court in Bezdin, if a person only left a tzava'a, if it was held in court or not.
When should he write on?
What's that?
When should he write on?
Probably when he's young. I mean, you know, when a person's young, it's a good time to write. Why should a person not write a will? I mean, a person has the chosim, a person has children, a person... Listen, if a person doesn't write a will, his daughter, secondly, and not Yerusha. All right, I spoke to Rabbi Beda, and I spoke to Rabbi Shweki this week, and they both told me that in the community, the minig is that people do leave money to the daughters. Right?
They don't write wills out of superstition.
Yes, I don't want to say this here, but in the back of my mind I have this concept. The editor said that it's good luck for a long life. But since I didn't see that in a long time, so I don't want to say those words as words.
And
as
far as I'm from the whole country, could not be
will. I want to tell you something. If you don't leave a will, but I just want you to realize, you don't write a will, your daughter is not included according to the Torah. Do you realize that? That's not a simple thing, right? And if somebody goes afterwards and he forces the sons to give to the daughters money, it's because they gave up. Alright? I mean, I had one case, by the way, obviously I can say it was a long time ago, and it was here in the community, by the way, where there was a very wealthy man died without a will, and he left over money, he had two sons and a daughter, and it was a very disappointing story. The two sons were extremely wealthy. The daughter's husband was destitute. He was a rebbe, and the two sons put up the fight of a lifetime that the full Yerusha belongs to them. Okay, Oyev Kesev LaYizba Kesev. Right? They have the classic example of Oyev Kesev LaYizba Kesev. And you know, there was a whole issue over there because according to civil law, a daughter is entitled to Yerusha.
Same as the boys.
Same as the boys, as is the wife, by the way, entitled to a third, according to civil law. And the issue there was that they tried to force her to sign, because she has to sign to release her right to the will in order to enforce Yerusha Daraisa. And her argument was that you want me to sign a charge. The charge is a third of the Yerusha for me to sign. That was her argument. It was a pretty decent argument. So, this...
When did it come out?
I don't want to go into the details of what happened afterwards. But the point I'm trying to say is, you posed the question. You said, when is the right time to write it? I don't think I think it's the right time to write it whenever a person has money. I think if a person doesn't have money, then he really better write a will. it's something that a person should write right away, 100%. So look at this Kamsaita. This Kamsaita is amazing because the Kamsaita deals with a lot of the issues that I want to deal with. And I want to just show how Kilach Yad, he deals with many of them.
There was a will that's put out by the standard.
Absolutely. There are. I'll bring one form next week. I suggest that what a person should do is they should get an attorney and draw up a civil will. And at the same time, this is the way people that approach me, this is the way I do it. I have them get an attorney to draw up a civil will. And after they draw up a civil will, I draw up a will according to the Torah that reflects the exact same concept and the same will. And I have ways of doing that where you can, again, of course, I first would advise them not to be Malanakwa. And of course, as I said, that in the past Urim, that daughter is the pastor, is not Malanakwa, right? And Rabbi Beda confirms to me, I know that's the Minhag in our circles, and Rabbi Beda confirms to me that by the Sfaradim it's the same. And the reason why that has become the Minhag is for one simple reason, is even though the Torah said differently, there's just been too much animosity in families when the daughters don't get, so that's why they did include them. You understand? But on the other hand, remember that that's only if it's written that way. If it's not written that way, then they don't get. So it's for that reason that I recommend write it up properly. And I'll show you how to do it, where you can write it up in a perfect fashion. I'll show you exactly how it's possible to do. Now take a look at Chamsaita, page number 3. Chamsaita says the following story. He says, there was a person who was a Yitzinichti, he was a very wealthy man. Shein Leibonim, he had no children. Okay, remember, he has an added dimension, there's no sons there. Right? I just want to say one thing, I want you to know. Unfortunately, but I deal with all types of demonitaries on a regular basis. And I find that the most difficult cases that I deal with are either matrimonial cases, but then everybody can understand why they're difficult. Because, as a husband and wife, the whole life, they're splitting, those are never pleasant. But I have to tell you, beyond those, the most unpleasant cases I've dealt with were Yerusha cases. There's something about Yerusha that everybody feels is like this belongs to them. It's like an interesting thing. And people have to have the sechel to realize that it's far more important to keep a family together than to fight over these things. You understand? It's really, really not, it's just not worth it. I can tell you that, up front. But look at this story. This man had no children. What does he have? He wants to give a shtar. Tavoyz bori. Right? What does he want to do? He wants to leave over a shtar bori as a keren kayemet and for tzedakah. Vamiyat hanichul yarsha. The rest of it leaves a little bit to the yarshim. Who are the yarshim here? Distant people. Right, brothers, cousins, whatever they are, nephews. Yishori the Talmud Chacham was zakik. He's a Talmud Chacham allowed to write up this will or not. So he starts off as follows, and he says, point number one, the Chamsayfa says, when we say Mavanachla, it's irrelevant if it's to another person or to tzedakah. You hear that? Isn't that amazing, Chamsayfa, to write that? Huh? He says, Toshit, L'chol Ma'ayin B'tsugi K'tah. If you look at the Tsugi even a bit, you'll see that it doesn't matter if you write it to another person, if you write it to tzedakah. What is proof? What did Yoshi Ben Yehuda do? What did he do? He took it, he laid it to the dinner, and what did he do with it? He gave it to the Hegdish. Now Chazal contemplated that he was Mavanachla. So if you say that tzedakah is okay, so how could they say he was Mavanachla? So he says that tzedakah also has a concept of Mavanachla. Interesting. Okay? Now, another point he says, point number 2 that Chamsayfa says, that it's regardless if he gives all his money away, or if he gives part of his money away. So the Chassam Sofer suddenly disagreed with what? With the Bala Issa. And the Chassam Sofer brings many rayas now like the Bala Issa. But at the end of the Chassam Sofer says, you know what he says? I have no choice. I'm stuck to listen to the Bala Issa. You know why I'm stuck to listen to the Bala Issa? Because he was a Rishon. So what am I going to do? So the Chassam Sofer says at the end of the following. He says, look, and I want to show you what he writes at the end. He says, ah, read the last paragraph. Ma'isim b'chol yoyim, these action stories that happen every single day. Mishayim le'bonim, first that has no children. Mitzvah la'asos minachosov keren kayemim, the dvorim toivim. Right? People that have no money, what do? People have no children, they leave a trust for tzedakah. He says, ah, you want to know why? I'll tell you why. Because Chazal tell us, that if you don't leave over children, Hashem gets angry at you. That's what Chazal tells. And if a person doesn't leave Yerusha to his son, that's when Hashem gets angry at him. So what you do is you take your money, you leave it to Tzedakah, and then Hashem doesn't get angry at you. That's what Chassam Sofer writes. So that's the pshara of how to get around this problem. So let's say what the Chassam Sofer says from a different angle. When you leave money for Tzedakah, who are you leaving the money for? For yourself. So for yourself you're allowed to do this. Right? The Beit Dover that we said, the man that gave the money to his second wife in order that she should take care of him. That's your own personal investment. Alright? But now, the Chassam Sofer basically at the end says as follows. He says, look, and remember, we have three tirufim in this case why you're allowed to do it. Number one, tzedakah. Number two, the man has no children. I don't have time to read it, but you'll follow the next two pages. There's a beautiful Sechem, and he brings many opinions back and forth. If you don't have a son, if there's Mavi and Achla. That's number two. And point number three is that you're leaving Yerusha Deraita to your children in the first place. What's that?
You're leaving something to
Yerusha Deraita. So I'm going to advise the following thing. Now let's go back to our question that we originally spoke about. If a person leaves Yerusha Deraita, which means starts with the Shavuot Deraita, I leave X amount of dollars out of the estate in order that I should be Mekayim Yerusha Deraita. So then, according to the Tashbis and the Issa and the Ktois, there is no Mavi Nachala. Then he has a specific reason why he wants to give beyond that more than one child over the other child. Like we said, one child is destitute and the other child is very wealthy. So, then already you can see it. You know, I recently went and I wrote up a Tavor for a certain person. And when I wrote up the Tavor, there was the person who I wrote it up for said, write up the Tavor, but leave a very large, much more for my daughter than for my son. So I said right away, I don't want to write these tzavot because I'm Mavi Nachala, I'm not going to do it. So the person who I was writing the tzavot said, listen to me, my son went and he stole money from me. This is what he said, my son stole money from me. I don't want to fight him while he's alive, but afterwards he'll find out that I caught him. Yeah, this is what he said to me. And it was a very serious amount of money. Okay, so I said to the I mentioned it to Rybelski afterwards, but I didn't tell him that the first stole. I simply said that he feels he gave more to one child over the other. So Rybelski's response to me was, if it's with a cheshbon that you already gave it to one over the other, there's no mavi nachala. You see, you understand? So I think what's important to say is as follows: is there a concept of mavi nachala? Of course. Is there a concept of mavi nachala when you take away from part of the Nechosim? Yes. But if you're doing it with other Tzirufim, like in some Sofer's case, he said, okay, we have Tzedakah, that would be one clear way out. But even if we don't have Tzedakah, now the truth is where it's going to be extremely tricky, which I'm not going to talk about it this week, just I'll talk about it next week. The common practice by a lot of people today is that when they write a Tzavah, what they do is they leave it first to the spouse, and then when the spouse dies, it goes to the children. Now why is that not Mavi Nachla? A much more difficult question to answer than you think it is. Sounds like a funny question? So think about it. It's a very good question if you go according to the Alos to the Torah. But I'll leave that question for next week.
How's the breakdown of your relationship? How's the breakdown? When the father
takes the way he goes to the sons, the daughters are out.
Is the wife in at all?
The wife, according to Ebenezer, has the ability to live off the estate for the rest of her life. So she doesn't get the Karen, she gets the Peres. That's what she gets. But the thing is as follows. The thing is, if the wife decides at some point to collect tzuba, then she doesn't collect these from the estate anymore. Okay? With wives, as I'll discuss next week, it gets a bit more tricky. What happens if she decides to remarry? It gets very tricky. And I'm dealing with one issue now, where there's a woman who lives her whole life a very simple life. Her husband left over a very large sum of money. And he left it to her, and then, you know, that she should give it to the kids. And she already notified all her daughter-in-laws the last time she called them in, but don't worry, I won't leave anything over. So I'm going to make sure to spend all of it. So she's suddenly got a new lifestyle. So it's a bit tricky, you know, don't kill yourself. So all of these situations have to be dealt with. But we'll deal with how to deal with wives in Yerusha. I'll deal with Levis Hashem next week. I don't want to deal with that right now. I want to show you something fascinating. Take a look. Go to the next page. Huh? Go to the next page. Simon Mentes, you have a story that happened by Rav Moshe Feinstein. And Rav Moshe Feinstein had the following idea. A person had no children, Rav Moshe Feinstein said, and he wanted to leave over a tzavot. So what Rav Moshe Feinstein said that he should do is as follows. He should first look for whatever relatives he had that were B'nai Torah, and they were Tamid HaKamim, and they needed it, he should leave the money to them. That's what Rav Moshe said. But then Rav Moshe said, take a look at this. That's what I wanted to show you. Rav Moshe says that that's the appropriate thing to do. That's Rav Moshe, two-thirds should go to them. But then he says that a third should leave to Mosot HaTorah. That's what he writes. But look at the third paragraph. But then Rav Moshe points out, but you should know, Abu Sarif later, but what you forgot, Shem Yesha Yoshin Yiduin, that's assuming you don't know who your relatives are. But if you have Yoshin Yiduin, for example, Achim, right, nephews, so on and so forth. So he says, then you got a problem of Mavin Achala. So what does Rav Moshe say you should do? He says, look, he says, in such a situation, I advise you. He says, take out, he says, a certain amount of money to be Mikayim, the tax list, that they sell for, and then you'll leave them Yerusha Deraita. And Rav Moshe suggests that should be a fifth of the estate. Once a fifth of the estate is given out, so you'll Mikayim Yerusha Deraita. So now give a third to yeshivot, and the other two-thirds to whichever krovim are tamidei chachamim. Okay, that's the shor that Rav Moshe writes. Then Rav Moshe comes along in Simon Nun, and Rav Moshe says, he says, listen, this is a really sad story. In Simon Nun, he says there was a father who had three sons. He says one was not shomet Torah. Two of them were not shomet Torah. Two of them were machal Shabbat. The Fahetia, they didn't send the kids to yeshiva. Then one of the granddaughters just married a goy. I mean, you read the truth, but it's a really horrible story. And then Rav Moshe says, and the children were all fantastically wealthy. Maybe that's why this happened to that family. Who knows, you know, what happened there. And he says at the end, he says that Rav Moshe went and he rode over all the money to tzedakah, and he left a little bit over to each of the grandchildren on the condition that they marry a Jewish spouse. You know, there was a court case now that was overturned. There was a person who went and left such a tzavot. And after he left his tzavot, that he only leaves tzavot to his children and grandchildren that marry Jewish spouses. It was contested in court, and that went to a court of appeals, and it was overturned that these Jerushas upheld. Just recently, the Court of Appeals ruled that a person is allowed to leave a will conditional upon marrying a Jewish spouse. Anybody wants to read about it, it's very interesting. There were a few very interesting cases recently. But in any event, this is what Rav Moshe writes. So Rav Moshe writes as follows. He says, and I want to tell you another very interesting thing Rav Moshe writes in the Tshuva. Rav Moshe says in the Tshuva that to leave money over to give you money for tzedakah, Rav Moshe says, he doesn't go like some pleasure thought. You're giving for tzedakah, you're doing it to yourself. I can give tzedakah to anybody I want. That's not Mavi Nachala. And Rav Moshe has a beautiful proof. The proof is as follows. Before a person dies, is he allowed to give all his money away for tzedakah? Yeah. Why TNT? What's the restriction? Because they made a takana in Usha, Hamavazvez Ayavazvez Yosin Yichaymish. Why? Because if you give away too much of your money, you're going to become poor. Why doesn't it say you're not allowed to give away your money because it's Ma'avi Nachala? Because you're not allowed to go and be Ma'avi Nachala. You're not allowed to take away the Yerusha from your children. We learned last week to give very large gifts while you're alive, even if it's a Matana, that's Asur, right? So then why doesn't it say you can't give too much tzedakah because you're taking away your children's money? And the answer is because your money belongs to you, and you can give as much tzedakah as you want. It's nobody's business. This is what Moshe writes. Ah, so it brings us back to square one. Why does the Gemara say that Yosef ben Yehiezer had a story that it was Ma'avir Nachalah because he gave too much tzedakah? So Moshe says, touch it. What happened by Yosef ben Yehiezer was that he decided he doesn't want to give Yerusha to his children. So therefore, what did he do? He gave tzedakah. There's a very big difference. There's a difference. When a person says, okay, let me give tzedakah. No child can restrict a parent to leave money over for tzedakah, Ramosha said. But on the other hand, if the parent's intent is to be ma'avir nachla. So in order to be ma'avir nachla, what does the parent do? They say, okay, let me give a lot of tzedakah. That already is done. You hear? It depends which came first. That's what Ramosha writes in the Truva. Another very interesting point. Okay, now, okay, you take a look at page number 7, which I'm not going to do right now, and page number 8 is a discussion in the Sefer Ketet HaKadoshim is what is the story when you have a situation when with the Bechor. I don't know, I would like to find out, and I put in a call to some of the rabbis this week. I asked them about girls. I want to ask them because I know that in many of our circles, people do not leave today Tishnayim for a Bechor. Do they leave today by the Sfaradim Tishnayim? They don't, right? you know that's a fact, huh? What's that?
He's not a Bechor.
What's that?
I'm a Bechor.
Oh, I see what's going on. Huh? Are you related?
No, he's my brother.
Huh? I know, but he's glad. I don't know what he's got. What's that? Who's the Bechor from you two? Oh, sisters, I need neither one, but nothing doing. Huh? It's interesting, man, but once I let's not totally, you know, relax, and hear what he is getting. You know what? Let me read to you something which you might find very interesting. Right? I didn't get to the whole discussion with adopted children, which is also a very fascinating discussion. Huh? Jack, listen to what. Take a look at page number 8. All right. You see, the truth is that it says that ma'avir nachalah is if you don't give a bechor tishnayim. So technically speaking, tishnayim is something that a person is entitled to. All right. I know that many circles they're not doing it, but they're doing something else. What?
If you don't,
you're not allowed not to, and on the contrary, if you write the Mishnah says clearly that if you write that the Bechor should not take Tishnayim, it's not from Akkas of the Torah. So that you know, even though we said that you can go be Moistis to one, this is one you can't get around. So, and it's interesting, in many circles they're not giving. I'm going to ask this week a few of the rabbis. I'm going to speak to Rabbi
Harari.
What? Oh, they're being over there. So I just want to tell you, it's interesting. No, but they say, okay, let's take $1,000 in the kind of Yerusha Deraisa. And from that Yerusha Deraisa, the Bechor takes Pishnayim.
Right.
Once it takes the Pishnayim, so then there's no issue. Okay. But he realized that the Tashfit himself, there was a big machoket, right? The Hamas brings many opinions that disagree with the Tashfit, but some Sfaradim is very unhappy with him. He says with other Tzirufim they'll accept him, like for Tzedakah, and when there's no children, but if not for that, he wouldn't accept the Tashfit flat out. Right? Now, maybe you'll take a look on page number seven. The Sechemet himself, page number 7, the Sechemet brings a host of opinions that disagree with the Tashlis and says there's Mavu Nachla even on a small amount of the Yerusha. Okay, so I just wanted to point that out. Look at page number 8. There's a sefer called Kesef HaKadoshim, which is quoted in the Hoshen Mishpat. And Alan, you better listen now because this is, you know. Hamatva b'noi ha-bechor b'dovah mesuyim avor chelik b'chayrosay. There are certain circles, he says, that they say to the bechor, I'm going to buy you out for a flat fee. That's what they do. They take, I know in many circles, like a token amount, and they say, okay, here's $10,000, they take in the Yerusha, and they say, this is in lieu of the Pishnayim. Even though the Pishnayim can be much greater, they take a certain, I'm not saying, it depends. Depending on the wealth of the people, that's how they decide how much money to buy the Pishnayim out. But it's not nearly the value of the actual Pishnayim. Nira, so the Kesef HaKadoshim says, the Moshiach Bezer Hashash Abura Chsanthan. There's no Abura Chsanthan in this case. Movad Mashikasafti B'mokam Acha B'shem Renat Shem B'derech Matanah Yedai Shemoishman. Now, firstly, you have a thing that said B'derech Matanah, you can do whatever you want.
Why would the person agree to this?
Oh, wait. So look what happened. I'll tell you, one of the answers to the question why a person would agree? There's no question that over the years, it became accepted that people didn't want to fight. And on the other side, the not giving daughters created fights, and giving the B'chor Kishnayim created fights. That's what happened. So eventually, they were basically asked. It's interesting. You read the first shtaris of daughters, by the way. The first shtaris. You know, Rabbi Meir told me that the Sfaradim, daughters are getting. I think if you said an equal share. You read the original Tavoris of the Ramah, daughters were getting a half share. You know how it works. It works as follows. You know, for example, according to the Torah, how do you do the Bechor? So you do is, you make believe there's one more person in the mix. Right? So there's five children, you make believe there's six, and the Bechor takes two shares. That's always how it's done. Now, what they did was, if there were girls, so they always made believe that every boy was like two people, and every girl got a half of a boy's share. That's what it originally was. So now, there are people that are giving more to daughters because they had issues that the daughters were insulted. And there are people that are not giving the Bechor that full amount because they felt that the other children were angry at the Bechor. You understand? This is basically very good question. It's a very, very good question. I'll tell you the truth. I myself found the studio.
Because the children should have grown up knowing the Bechor is supposed to get two and the girls will take care from their husbands. It's
our
fault, not the Torah.
Okay, it's a fair way of looking at it, and the point is also take a look at when the Torah wrote it.
When the husband's father
passes
away, he's an inheritance
father. Yeah, true. But I want to say something else. If you take a look at the Torah system is very much in the system that he just mentioned, because they had both the others, and they had Akuza, and they lived in the Neretz Yisrael, and they had their specific family plot, and everybody came back to the Ben Zachar. You know, exactly. I wanted to add that too. The Bechor had a role that the Bechor, you look at the Yisraelim, why is an obligation to have kavod for a Bechor? So, some say because the Bechor didn't ruin it, right? Because he could have killed the womb on the way out. That's why every younger sibling has to respect his older sibling. But it goes beyond that. They have certain roles, and they sort of share the burden of the family with the father. You know, it was very different then. But look what he says over here afterwards. He says, the Kasafi Malkamacha Shiasal Laima Shevarotan Achan Ein Shim Chashash. Take a look, he says. If the brothers agree to the Yerusha, then there's no Chashash. Achva Gahagav Neshu Machal Ben Bonob So therefore, he writes as follows: since it's possible to give something extra to the Benoy HaBachor, right? You can give something extra, so give him something extra. But then once you give him that extra amount, you buy him out from Ichayim, and therefore it's like a Toivah Tanoh that he agrees to get like everybody else. That's what became here. But it's interesting, I find out what the minhag about the Sfaradim is with Bukharim. I'm not going to go through the rest because we got to go to Myers later already. But the rest of the Shuvahs are fascinating. If anybody has time to read it about adopted children, if a person left, is a very interesting Shuvah, which is written, the person left money to his son, and then turns out that his son was adopted, and he had a grandson, but his son wasn't alive anymore, and therefore the question was, do you go b'nei bonim ha'kareim kebonim over an adopted child? A very interesting question. Or when a person... He just verbally said, give it to my son. Or what do you do in the situation when a person leaves it... But a person just leaves money to his children. He writes in the will, give the money to my children. And he has regular children and adopted children. So who is children? And then you go into the questions of Ibn Achsanta, right? It's very interesting. The whole interesting pattern of Shuvahs on adopted children, you should read it. He has a whole bunch of letters there. The father that has the...